In association with Newsarama, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. I'm back from the New York Comic Con. It was a great time, and I'm sure if you have been watching the Newsarama coverage, you've seen tons of written stories about the con. Some great talks that I've had with Matt Fraction and Greg Rucka so far. More videos coming as the days and weeks progress. But on this edition of Word Balloon, here are the audio interviews that I was able to do on the floor when I wasn't doing the video interviews. Some are familiar names, but it's great to talk to them and get an update on what's going on with their projects that I love so much. Guys like Andrew Peepoy, who will be talking about his work for Vertigo, Bongo, and Archie Comics. Also Christos Gage, doing fantastic work for Marvel and Wildstorm, among some other projects that he'll be talking about. Alex Saviak, great Marvel Spider-Man artist, great DC artist of the 80s, currently doing the Spider-Man comic strip where he inks the daily and pencils the Sunday strip, of course both written by Stan Lee. Jim McCann, the marketing director for Marvel Comics, but also writing the upcoming New Avengers. Jay Ferber, who is doing his great creator-owned work at Image, books like Gemini and Dynamo 5, and also has a couple projects for Top Cow. We'll be discussing that. Xander Cannon, the fine artist and writer who currently is writing Top 10 Season 2 with his old pal Gene Ha. Dan Slott, doing great work on Mighty Avengers and also on The Amazing Spider-Man Weekly. And it's great to have seen Dan, so I'm glad to bring you 10 minutes of him chatting away. Joe Gentile, the publisher of Moonstone Books, talking about some great new pulp projects that are in the works for Moonstone. They've had great success recently using pulp heroes in novel form and writing full-length novels and short stories, and there's some collections that he's going to be talking about in our interview today. Tom Zoller, who writes the very funny superhero comic Love and Capes, available online and also through Diamond, and we'll be discussing some events that he's got coming up in the Love and Capes series. And finally, the other video correspondents, all of us bringing you the coverage live from the con, the three guys from Comic Book Club, Alex, Justin, and Pete.
Tony, it's finally nice to meet you. It's Dan Slott, everybody. I'm right up in front of the Marvel booth, but it's a pleasure to see you. And, wow, Dan's making sure that he's talking to me.
Hey!
And it's been forever. We did one show a long, long time ago.
Forever ago, John.
And I'm sorry about that.
I like thinking of it as four Bendises ago.
Yeah, I know.
That's how I measure time.
I can appreciate you're not alone, man. I'm sorry about that. But, hey, man, I really like the lineup.
I think I call that a Bendai. One Bendai, four Bendises.
Honestly, love the lineup for Mighty Avengers. Really, that's a fun group. That's a very cool group.
Thank you. Actually, most people don't know who the what the final lineup is going to be until Mighty Avengers 24. And even then, once we have the whole lineup set up for 24, we're going to constantly be bringing in classic Avengers for guest stints for like 2, 3, 4 issues. So
that's cool.
Thor will pop by, or Wonder Man and the Beast will pop by.
Cool.
So we'll constantly be giving the book a big old-fashioned-y to the core, to the roots Avengery feel.
Well, and it was, you know, as Bendis figures into the conversation, I've liked the new versions of what he's done, but it's been enough time that it's nice to return to a classic sense adventure story.
Actually, we're just following in Bendis and Frank Cho's footsteps. That, like, when you think about what Bendis did with Avengers Disassembled, making way for, like, the new Avengers, which is the hot comic around the world. Like, when you think about that, once he and Frank Cho started doing Mighty Avengers, it really was like Avengers reassembled, getting back to classics, you know, Iron Man, Black Widow, Wonder Man, Ms. Marvel, characters that have always really had Avengers roots. We're just kind of continuing that legacy, doing counter-programming to the worlds of Wolverine and Luke Cage and Spider-Man.
Your world is good, man. You got the Mighty Avengers and you're doing your Spider-Man stories. That's got to be cool.
It is kind of like a pinch me or I wake up kind of thing, especially now that we're gearing up to Spidey 600. Like, in my wildest dreams, I never thought I'd be working on that book.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know what? I've really enjoyed the stories. Steve's got a great team of guys working on it, both art-wise and story-wise.
Well, we're now called Webheads instead of, back when Bree Ward said, you will now be known as the Brain Trust. I'm like, oh, yeah.
That's nice.
That's not going to, like...
Not put, catchy.
No, it's kind of like putting glasses on us, some corrective shoes, and shoving us out of the schoolyard. You're the Brain Trust. That hurts. Yeah, nothing bad's going to come of that. No, so I like that we now... you know, repackaged it. And it's great to have Joe Kelly and Mark Waid on board.
You bet.
With Guggenheim and Bob Gale still hanging around doing, he's going to be doing online Spider-Man adventures.
Cool.
And be an active part of the Brain Trust. I did it again.
Webheads.
Webheads. That's what we're going to call our softball team. No, but it's really, it's exciting because you get all these people. To me, one of the cool things about it is not only do you get to work with these people, but you get to see their scripts and give notes, and they give notes on your scripts. So it's like, you're getting notes from Mark Waid. How is that not going to make you better?
Absolutely, man.
Yeah.
Hey, I love Mr. Negative. Congratulations. It's a great new villain.
Oh, and Fred Manlenti's going to be doing a Dark Reign Mr. Negative miniseries.
Wow.
And I always like seeing like the characters going on and other people doing stuff with them.
Yeah, that really does. That has to be the highest compliment for a creator, just to see somebody else pick it up and do something new with it.
It's like you're sending your kids off to college. Like, you know, I'm loving every single issue Chris Gage is doing of The Initiative. It's a great, fun book.
Just talked to Christos, and yes, and mentioned that I enjoyed you guys co-writing. Loved your run on this as well. And yeah, Christos is really continuing the spirit of the book and going into different directions, too.
Yeah, all the new plans he has, it's like, it's exciting. I'm like, what is he going to do with Komodo? What's he going to do with my girl? No, it's exciting.
Well, you know, and I love the Thing book, love She-Hulk and everything, but it's nice that they've continued to give you bigger toys to play with and, you know.
I'm still playing with the old toys. We're doing two issues of Amazing Spider-Man 560 and 561, where it's going to be Spider-Man Fantastic Four team up.
Excellent.
So I'm going to get a lot of Spidey Torch, a lot of Spidey Thing, you know, and I just never want to be away from these characters. It's really fun.
That's beautiful, man. Hey, and also, thank you for turning me on to Mock the Hoople. Or not Mock the Hoople, Mock the...
Hoople the Mock.
Yeah, Hoople the Mock, a great science fiction-based rock band, because I don't want to call it Filk, because it's better than Filk.
No, it's like superhero Filk.
Yeah.
Shulk.
Yeah, that would be... That works for me.
There you go.
But search for Hoople the Mock, two O's, K-L-A, the Mock.
Especially find their Super Skrull theme song.
I haven't heard that one yet. I remember Aquaman, Arthur Curry, and Secret Identity. I mean, really cool stuff.
They have a Super Skrull song, and like three-quarters of the way through the song, they run out of rhymes for Super Skrull. So his favorite band is Jethro Tull. It's really good. It's good stuff.
So we'll look for that online, and we'll look for you on the newsstands and in the bookstores. Mighty Avengers, Amazing Spider-Man, Dan Slott. Good to see you, and seriously, we will get more Bendis time. We should do the Slott Report or something like that.
That would be awesome. Thanks, John. Thanks, Word Balloon.
Hanging out here at the New York Comic Con with Sander Cannon, who's been a wonderful artist for years, and is also a wonderful writer, and has been proving it on America's Best Top 10. Now, you all remember that fine series from Alan Moore. You might have heard me talk with Gene a few times about the book, and Sander, as a matter of fact, as well. But finally, it is now Sander and Gene doing season 2, and we're 3 issues in. And Sander, congratulations. Honestly, the story is fantastic. And I know I'm not the only person that has talked about this series and said, for people that were concerned that Alan wasn't writing this, the quality is right there. And it's like a TV series, and you're just as good of a writer on this series as Alan is, honestly.
Well, that's high praise. I don't really know what to say to that. It's been really, really fun working on it. It's nice to have these characters that are so well designed and so well written beforehand to really be able to have their voices in my head from the get-go.
Well, and you know, I know you did the art for the Smack series, and I know also weren't you the anchor or whatever on the original run as well?
Well, I was a layout artist, and actually that's what I do now I do the script, and then I do layouts, and then Gene does the finished artwork over it. So it's very similar other than we just dropped Alan Moore.
You threw him off.
Yeah.
Well, like I say, I know is the first story arc is only 4 issues. Am I correct?
That's right. Well, it was intended. It's a longer story, but Gene could commit to only 4 issues, and so what we're doing is these first 4 issues, and there's going to be a special with a new artist, and we're going to see how that does.
Very cool. I know you had the breakdowns here at the con that you provided the artists and stuff, and that's a great thing. I even remember months ago talking to you on convention floors, and you showing me the breakdowns that you had done that you were going to pass on to Gene and the new artist as well, and they were you know fully rendered. I mean, they were very detailed for being breakdowns and everything, so it's cool to see. And also, it's great to see the little bits of business. I mean, beyond, you've got the script right, the Easter eggs are still there, so there's always fun to, like, look at within the panel of the series. It's a great cop series for people who don't know it, but it certainly has a twist in this city of superheroes. And how else would you describe the series for people who don't know, that haven't tried Top 10 yet?
Well, Well, I mean, you know, there's always the high concept stuff of it's a Hill Street Blues in every superhero universe that's ever existed. And that's always fun, too, because it's like you can take something... The police procedural is, by its nature, so mundane. I mean, in a good way. It's the daily adventure, you know, daily sort of lives of people. But every time you have something boring, quote, boring happen, you can have a little weird, funny twist that someone, you know, that someone can say, oh, that's funny, that's the power cosmic or the cosmic cube in the background or whatever. And you know, of course, we try to keep it a little bit more obscure than that, but it's always fun. It's fun to be able to have that funniness and that silliness in the midst of mundane and also sort of downbeat stuff, you know.
Well, and it's a shared secret that a comic book audience can appreciate some of the inside jokes, and they'll get them right away. But, like, I liked the Promise Keeper kind of retreat that you had for the one unfortunate cross-dressing hero, and it's to hopefully strengthen his marriage and maybe not make him, you know, want to be as deviant as I guess he's been as in the minds of the characters in the book. And
yeah, well, and I can't take full credit for the Premise Keeper's pun. That was my friend Shad Petoskey who came up with that one, and he deserves full marks for that, because that was a great one. It just you know, really grabs you when you hear it.
And inadvertent ironies, everybody wants Obama in their book, but certainly recent political scandals have included Illinois' Governor Rob Blagojevich, who makes this an unbilled cameo in an issue two, I believe, of Top Ten. Am I correct?
Well, you know, you'd have to talk to Gene about that. A lot of this stuff, I mean, I put in a lot of background details, and I'm convinced that sometimes Gene just ignores them all and puts in his own, which I think is fantastic, because then, you know, then it's like, well, we have these little hidden gems that I can look for now. You know, so people will say, oh, yeah, I saw this guy in the background, and be like, I don't even know who that guy is. I'm glad he does it. It's really fantastic.
Well, like I said, man, you guys picked up exactly where you left off in season one. And yeah, I know people might be on the surface disappointed that Alan Moore may not be in, but the good news is, you know, if you crack open the books, the tone is there, the story is there, the art is there, and it's great to see Top Ten back after such a long time away. So congratulations, Xander. Go out and check out the book, folks. Don't wait for the trade on this one, because these guys deserve your support as the series progresses. And congratulations, and it's good to see you.
Thanks, it's great to see you.
Hey, I'm standing here at the New York Comic Con with Christos Gage, one of my favorite Greeks in comics. It's at this point just you and Chris Iliopoulos, as we usually say when we get together.
Doug Mankey's Greek also.
I always forget that Doug Mankey's Greek. Say shame on me. But, hey, man, I know you were co-writing Avengers The Initiative with Dan, and now it's your book. And obviously things have changed since. And tell us about the changes and what is ensuing with Dark Reign in the Avengers. I enjoyed Clor in issue.
Marvel likes him to be called Ragnarok. That's his name now, is Ragnarok, but you can call him Clor.
The fans always call him Clor.
The Greeks can call him Clor. Clor came along. Ragnarok came along and raised all manner of hell.
Hey, Mario. This is Mario Berti.
Hi, Mario.
Hi.
And my artist on X-Men Spider-Man, one of the best artists in the business.
Beautiful work on there, Mario.
Thanks a lot.
That's Steve Wacker over there, by the way.
Great.
He'll definitely want to meet you. Do you want to ask Mario something?
Absolutely, man. That's a really fun book where we're seeing Spider-Man and the X-Men and all their various incarnations, even a little Ben Reilly in there, which is very cool. What's been your favorite part of Marvel history that you've been able to do yourself?
Well, the 70s, because I used to read Spider-Man when I was a kid, and that were the years. So I was so much fond of Gwen Stacy and all the characters. So actually drawing the coffee bean and all the people in, not in costume, but in their plain clothes, it was lots of fun, and it was great.
That's great, man. The book is gorgeous, and it really has been fun watching your art and Chris's story come together, and I'm looking forward for more Marvel work for you. Is there anything new coming up that you can talk about, or is it too early?
We can talk about it, yes, but there will be, definitely, so.
We'll keep our eyes open.
Let's just say we really enjoyed working together and look forward to doing so in further.
Well, you see, Chris, man, you know, Marvel always gives Chris really cool people to work with, you and Mike Perkins, and now we got Mario, so that's awesome. Man. Well, very cool.
Thanks, man.
Excellent. For you, Chris, what's been fun about doing Spider-Man and the X-Men?
Well, it's just been so much fun going back through Marvel history and trying to capture the feel of each era. You know, so for instance, without directly, you know, trying to write like Stan Lee, because, you know, if you respect other people's individual styles, you don't want to try to copy it, because that's disrespectful. But trying to, you know, emulate the feel of that era in the book, while at the same time, you know, keeping it up to, you know, what contemporary audiences expect. and it's been a lot of fun. You know, the first issue was more lighthearted, the second issue was a bit darker, and the third issue with Ben Reilly, a lot of uncertainty, you know, Ben Reilly questioning, you know, if he's the real Spider-Man, and by the way, a lot of fans have responded really positively to him coming back, so I'm glad about that. It was Steve Wagger's idea. I'm serious.
Don't worry, it's cool, yeah. Chris. I'm happy to see Ben Reilly back.
There you go.
It used to be a four-letter word, Ben Reilly. It's not anymore, man.
No. People like it. So it's just been fun going through those back issues and trying to recapture that feel, because, you know, we all grew up reading that and have a soft spot in our hearts for it.
Excellent. And we started to talk about Ragnarok being in the initiative.
Yes. So he came along, raised a whole bunch of hell. We saw the return of the original New Warriors. They're going to continue to be a presence in the book, possibly. And there's a wait until you see what's coming up. There's a question of who will cause more damage, Ragnarok or the New Warriors. The initiative is going to undergo some huge, huge changes. That's why the arc is called Disassembled. By the time it's done, the initiative as we know it will have changed completely what it's like. That's not to say, don't worry, your favorite characters for the most part will still be around, but in very different roles than what they're used to. So I really hope people stick around and see what's going on. Big changes and big things happening in every issue. Umberto Ramos is doing fantastic work on it.
Beautiful work.
And, you know, just stick around. I don't think you'll be disappointed.
Cool. And, God, I almost feel blasphemous asking about your non-Marvel work as we're standing here in Marvel, but what the hell?
Okay, we're just outside the Marvel booth, so we're actually outside the limit, you know, like the gambling boats that go outside the limit.
So, let's start with Wildstorm, you and Neil Gooch and everything.
Yeah, Neil Gooch and I are continuing on to work on Wildcats. Neil's here at the show. We're having a great time hanging out. You know, we've got some big stuff coming up. We just, issue 8, which is coming out soon, is Ladytron Unleashed, drawn by Pete Woods. Issue 9 begins Neil and I doing a big four-part story, which brings together all the storylines we've seen so far. You've got the Wildcats journeying to Majestic's utopian Isle of Hawaii, an island of normalcy amid the Armageddon world, and we'll finally find out what he's been stashing away in there, what sort of dark secrets he has. Meanwhile, Defile and his Daemonites will make a move on the Halo building while the Wildcats are away, leaving only Ladytron there to guard the home front. And so it's all going to come together in an explosive way. And then coming out of that, we're leading up into more stuff, which we've been seeding in the backup stories. Currently, as readers have seen, there's a backup story featuring Tau, the villain from Ed Brubaker's fantastic Sleeper book.
You bet.
And, you know, with Ed's blessing, I've been using Tau and many of his henchmen from that book.
Cool.
And Tau is, you know, trying to basically claim ultimate power for himself and seize total control of all reality. So he's really shaping up to be a great earth-shaking villain. And I mean, he was a great villain before, but really like a cosmic-level villain now. And, you know, that's going to be pretty exciting.
Fantastic. And you mentioned you got some Avatar stuff coming up.
Yes, I'm doing a book for Avatar called Absolution, which is essentially about, it's set in a world where superhumans are licensed by the police. They're actually another branch of the law enforcement.
Okay.
They're not superpowers. There's no Magneto in this world. There's no one with huge earth-shaking powers. The power's a little more, you know, not down to earth per se, but, you know, not quite as high in level as Marvel and DC characters. And it's about a guy who's, and I just wanted to examine what it would be like to really be a superhero, see horrible, horrible things each day, and what it does to somebody. You know, I've been reading about the post-traumatic stress, you know, that our troops are facing, sadly, coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. And, you know, I just wanted to sort of touch on that. A good guy who believes in doing the right thing and what happens when he's pushed too far. So, and in Avatar, of course, there are no editorial restrictions. So can I curse in this broadcast?
Absolutely. All right. It's word balloon. Go for it.
I can come up with characters named Clusterfuck and things like that. So, you know, it's a lot of fun.
That's beautiful, man. You were mentioning you've got an Arcana project that is both going to find comic form and then also will be hitting the screen, and you and your wife worked on it.
As a matter of fact, yes, Paradox, which is a creator-owned book I did with Arcana Studios several years ago, recently got purchased as a movie, and my wife Ruth and writing partner Ruth and I, who came up with the idea together, we wrote the screenplay, and it's It actually was shot in Vancouver. They've just wrapped. They're in post-production now. It's going to be starring Kevin Sorbo, known to fans from Hercules Legendary Journeys, and I believe that there's going to be a trailer done in time for San Diego Comic-Con, and so hopefully there'll be more news there. I'm a little bit out of touch. They're up in Vancouver, so I'm not entirely even sure what's going on, but you know, I'm hoping that it'll turn out real nice, and it's a great fun concept. It's about a homicide detective on a parallel Earth that runs on magic instead of science. So it's almost like if you can imagine CSI, but in a world that runs on magic and not science.
Well, that's cool. You know, you're a whiz with procedurals. We've seen that on TV and in the comics with Stormwatch, so that's excellent.
Speaking of which, I forgot, just announced at this show was my Vertigo Crime original graphic novel.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's called Area 10. I think it'll be out late 2009, possibly early 2010. The artist is Chris Samney.
Wonderful. Really terrific. Wonderful artist. Absolutely.
Amazing work on Queen and Country. This is very much in line with that. Black and white, very moody. And that also, it's a bit of a procedural with sort of supernatural or extrasensory perception tones. It's about a homicide detective who sustains a head injury that may be giving him extrasensory perception of some type, or he may just be going completely crazy. And what's fun about that is playing with a protagonist who's unreliable. I want the reader to sympathize with him and identify with him, but maybe also feel a little uncomfortable with him. So
that's beautiful, man. Nice going on with the Man with No Name for Dynamite.
And, thank you.
And as always, a fine crime writer, a fine hero writer.
Oh, and G.I. Joe Cobra.
G.I. Joe Cobra for IDW.
Yeah, Mike Costa and I are writing G.I. Joe Cobra for IDW, 4 issues starting in March. The most hardcore G.I. Joe book you ever saw. Put it in the bank.
Fantastic, man. Nice slate of books, both creator-owned and corporate characters from Chris Gage, who's been kicking ass since he's joined the comics world, and I'm really happy about it. Keep it going, Chris. Nice going.
Thank you, my Greek brother.
You betcha, man. Really happy to see Alex Savick here at the New York Comic Con because, you know, at all Comic Cons that I end up going to, Alex is a great guy, and I always enjoy talking to him, having dinner with him when we can, and enjoy his work on the Spider-Man Sunday strip and the Daily strip as well. And give me the breakdown of what you do for both, Alex.
Okay, well, for the Sunday newspaper strip, I pencil, and for the dailies, I ink. So literally on Sundays, I would say I have the pleasure of working with Joe Sinnott, who's been a Marvel mainstay, I understand now, for 59 years. And his work is just as good as it is now as it was, you know, in years past. And on the dailies, I work over Stan Lee's brother, Larry Lieber, who's been probably penciling the strip for about 20 years, and I've been inking it now for about 5.
Excellent. I got to ask you, because as someone in radio and in media as well, we're all concerned about the economy. Everyone is concerned about the economy. Media is taking a big hit this year, and really for several years now, newspapers have kind of been in decline. We're seeing cities that have had 2 newspapers go down to 1, and I've just heard recently, too, that there's concern that they're kind of pulling back on strips, and you know, now even that is becoming something on the ledger that they are really considering, what strips we keep and what strips we lose. And I know Spider-Man has been a popular strip since it's debuted, but I was just wondering if you felt the impact yet, or if you've seen it, or, you know, and also just what your perspective of what's going on. Isn't it interesting that at one time it was the ambition to get to the newspaper strips? I mean, Eisner wanted to be Milton Caniff if he could, and now, unfortunately, it seems like there's more business in the comic book world than there is in the newspaper strip world.
Well, the thing is, I think that, number one, realistic-type strips have been on a decline for at least a decade, if not more, anyway. When I first started on working on the Sunday strip back in 1997, I found out that there were maybe only about 50 or 60 newspapers in the United States that were carrying the Sunday strip and the dailies. That, I think, at this particular point in time, 10, 12 years later, has probably declined to maybe, and you can't quote me on this, but I'd say realistically half that amount of papers still carry it. And it's not that the big cities even carry it. It seems that you would think that if you've got, you know, all the states of you know, throughout America, if you could have one or two papers per state, you'd still be in 100 papers or 75 papers. But basically, what I even find that at certain conventions, people come up to me and they say, oh, I see your strip, and I find out that they live in some little town in Alabama.
Yeah, or the Appleton, Wisconsin News or something like that.
Exactly. Although from, you know, people here at this particular convention have told me that a big city like Detroit still carries the Sunday and the dailies, which is nice to hear.
Excellent.
Okay, but I know for a
fact that the strip is alive and well on online, which it has been for quite a long time now, and even though I think that possibly if the newspapers themselves might start to cut back because of, A, licensing fees, which Spider-Man is obviously licensed through Marvel, and I know that the strip has been dropped over the years because I understand that Marvel, for some reason or other, rather than thinking that they might want to market it so that the strip goes out to more papers because of the popularity of the character via movies, entertainment. I find that even before the first movie came out, somebody would email me and say, hey, they just dropped the strip in my newspaper and the movie's coming out in 2 months. What's up with that?
No kidding.
And I'd say, well, obviously the licensing fee went up because they're figuring, well, there's going to be more popularity to movie. So you'd think somehow they would market, somebody would say, hey, listen, we could do in quantity what we could do in terms of just like, well, we have to raise costs, which is kind of stupid because they're not taking up any more space. If anything, in the olden days, the Spider-Man strip in a lot of papers would actually get a full page. I remember back in the late 70s, early 80s, I can say this now with great pride, was the fact that back in 1980, John Romita Sr. had gotten in touch with me about possibly ghosting and doing some layout work for his Sunday strip.
Wow.
When he was running into some deadline problems. And yeah, we're going back, okay, almost 30 years, so I don't think, you know, and John is living gloriously in retirement. So nobody's going to call him up and say, what? You had him do layouts for you? I don't think that's going to happen. But at any rate, yeah, I did about 4 weeks for him. It was a lot of fun, but the newspaper, the layouts were 1.5 times to almost twice as large as I'm working on now. So because he would do he would have an entire page in the Daily News, okay, at that time. And so in New York, I think it went from the Daily News to the New York Post to the Newsday, and then finally it got dropped. So which is kind of sad to say because you figure, well, Spider-Man is such an icon. Why wouldn't you want to have that character in your paper? I live in Florida in the Daytona Beach area, and at least there in the Sunday paper, they still carry the Phantom, which has been God knows
what. Back to the 30s.
I think it's 70 years old, finally.
Sure.
Okay. And so at least you get to see the Sunday there. They don't carry the dailies, but there at least the Sundays and the dailies are two different storylines, so you can still follow it.
That's cool.
And it's nice. We also have Prince Valiant, which is great. Okay.
Legendary Hal Foster.
Yes. And I've been in touch with the Orlando Sentinel, probably the bigger paper in the state, about, you know, what do they think about getting the characters, and they said, well, again, it boiled down to licensing fees.
Sure.
Okay, and, you know, maybe, who knows, maybe if you got to sign a petition and you got 1,000 people to write into the paper and say, hey, we want to see the strip, maybe they'd look into it. But if they can save money, and if that's the whole bottom line these days, and as you know, I don't have to tell you that, as you say, papers have been on a decline. Book publishing has to have been on a decline, although when they say somebody like J.K. Rowling is still going to sell like 100,000 copies or 500,000 copies.
Well, the Twilight books are like that as well.
Exactly. So, I mean, people still, like myself, there are younger readers out there, like my daughter, who's 20, majoring in media communications and journalism, all right, still likes to hold the book in her hands rather than staring on a computer screen.
Sure.
Which, after a while, I think turns you into some sort of a fossilized idiot anyway. Just by constantly staring straight ahead, you're damaging your optic nerves, and I think you're frying your brain.
That's why we do audio podcasts, kids. You can do stuff while you're listening to Word Balloon.
Exactly. So, I mean, I do computer work in my line also, but basically it's just scanning the work in, maybe doing a little bit of some sort of, let's say, post-work in Photoshop, a little correcting, but to have to do a whole job in the computer is, quite honestly, at the end of the day, I've done it on certain advertising jobs, and my eyes and my brain are fried just from staring
at it. Oh, I hear you, man. And I know a lot of people listening probably feel the same way.
And I have my hats are off to all those guys who work in, you know, CGI and for movies and stuff.
Oh, my God.
Who are putting in 15-hour days, and they just do it day in, day out. So, anyway, but it's, again, going back to the newspaper situation, I haven't heard anything yet about the repercussions of that. I guess we'll have to see how the year progresses. But as King Features carries the strip online, for anybody who wants to see their read all their strips, they started charging about, I think, 5 years ago, $14.95 for the entire year. So when you think
oh my gosh, they're going to charge me $1.30 a month to read all these great comic strips. If you can't afford that, well then give up that one small cup of coffee and you can have all these great strips to read. But again, I'll just have to wait and see what happens. As long as I think Stanley is interested in continuing to produce the strip, I think that they'll probably still be going with it, whether it's, you know, in some little town in Wisconsin or, you know, a big city like Detroit. So we'll just keep our fingers crossed.
Well, good luck with it, man. I know, as you say, you've been working on it now for, you said 5 years or 4 years?
Well, 5 years inking the dailies and about 12 years penciling the Sunday.
I thought it was longer. Absolutely, man. And there you go. This all-star cast producing the Spider-Man strip of Larry Lieber, Stan Lee, Joe Sinnott, and, of course, Alex Savick. So I'm, in fact, buying two panels right now. I wish I could show you, but it's audio. Very Lichtenstein-esque sequences here that I'm very thrilled to get. But very happy to see you, Alex. And I hope to see you at one of the other cons this year as well. So.
All right, sounds great. Thanks a lot, John.
I'm standing at the Moonstone booth, and as I always do at cons, because I'm always happy to see the product that comes out from them, and happy to see the Moonstone publisher, Joe Gentile. Joe, it's great to see you. It's so nice to see some of the books that have been promoted for a while. They're finally out, and they look fantastic. I see the Doc Savage Lost Radio scripts and the Avenger Chronicles. Let's talk about those.
Yeah, those were a long time in the making, but they're finally here. They look great. They're selling really well for us.
Excellent, man. I mean, they're beautiful covers, and here, I'm going to start off with the Avenger one, just because, look at that. Is that our friend Doug Klaba?
That is Doug doing the, Doug is, did a pencil sketch here of the limited edition hardcover for the Avenger. It's the first time ever that it's the character and all of his agents on one drawing.
That's excellent, man. Jesus, look at that. That's just great, and it's wonderful to see these pulp characters kind of getting back the spotlight, and I'm really glad that you were able to get the rights to publish some of these things, and the same with Doc Savage. Now, these are radio scripts that Lester Denna actually wrote, or Kenneth Robeson. I always forget which is the pseudonym and which is the real guy.
The real guy is Lester Denna.
Okay.
And he wrote these in the early 30s, so right after Doc, you know, started being published. He wrote these radio scripts. Only half of them have ever seen press before. So we put them all in one book. We got new illustrations by Tom Roberts. Great cover by Doug Klaba for the hardcover. And, yeah, we finally put it together. The originals were on film, negatives. And all the films are deteriorating because they're really old.
Sure.
So it took a long time to restore everything, reprint everything, and get everything in order.
That's excellent, man. How many different stories are in the Doc Savage thing? Well, just a ballpark.
Oh, there's got to be
a dozen.
There's over a dozen different ones, and, you know, he actually didn't finish a couple of them, so we put in some summaries of the stories to kind of make it all complete.
Very cool. And the Avengers, let me take a look at some of the people that are writing these stories. Paul Kupperberg is on here, Martin Powell, Richard Dean Starr, Wynn Eckert, Tom DeFalco is on here, C.J. Henderson, who you might remember one of my favorite stories, Archie versus the Punisher, and what did I just see? Joe Gentile, of course, is on here. I've heard of him, heard about it. Great Will Murray, wonderful pulp writer.
Right, and we also have Robert Randisi, you know, well-known mystery writer doing that for us for the Avengers stuff. We received the prose rights to the Green Hornet.
Oh, that's great. Congratulations.
Thank you. So new stories, new illustrations, a darker version of the TV show is what it's going to be, really crime fiction stuff. So no matter what the movie is or what anything else happens.
Yeah, we don't know. The movie's up in the air, so that's great.
Yeah, and we never got to, they're not telling us what the movie was going to be about or how to handle the character. So we can do it our way, which is going to be the classic way and crime fiction. So
very cool, man. Excellent. Well, that's great, man. Congratulations. I think it looks great. And wonderful pulp characters. And, I mean, that's the stamp of Moonstone. Great mysteries, great horror stories, and a good shot in the arm for the pulp world as well. Captain Action as well, another one, a wonderful imprint that has started recently with Moonstone. So check out their stuff. Moonstone Books, the great Joe Gentile, even Zorro.
That's right.
So, and Buckaroo Banzai. I'm looking at the various stills up here on the Moonstone booth. But it's good to see you, Joe. We'll have you back soon, and then we'll do a full-fledged word balloon, okay?
Great. Thanks, John.
Back on the floor here at the New York Comic Con, and very happy to run into one of my favorite detective fans, and especially TV detective fans. It's Jay Ferber and at the Top Cow booth. Good to see you, Jay.
Yes, nice to see you, too. Always a pleasure.
What can you tell me about one of the books you're writing now, Urban Myths? That's a new one.
Urban Myths was a was part of the pilot season program in 2008 with Top Cow, and sadly, we did not win. You know, it's a program where they do one issue of a bunch of comics, and they vote, and the top two become series. Urban Myths was a narrow third place. and was successful enough, there's still kind of a grassroots campaign around it, so we're hoping to do more, maybe later in the year. The two winning books, obviously, are getting underway first, and then, you know, if we can convince them that there's still enough interest, we will do more. So I'm here to sign Urban Myths and to talk, you know, promote the Witchblade Annual, which I also wrote. It's the first Witchblade Annual, I believe, and it takes place in the current Ron Mars kind of continuity, so it's current stuff, and it's just a good, solid, done-in-one adventure, just a good mystery, a little supernatural angle, some Witchblade action. It's good stuff.
Everybody loves Sarah, and they're getting used to Danny.
One of them is actually all Sarah.
Okay.
It's Sarah and her partner, Patrick Gleason.
Cool.
Not to be confused with artist Patrick
Indeed.
Gleason, who's a good friend of mine. But this is Detective Patrick Gleason.
Cool.
But he'll be around, too.
That's excellent, man. Well, you know, I know you are a fan of a good police procedural, and that is part of the appeal of Witchblade, beyond the
yeah.
fantasy element, and that's the great thing is, as it's always been, a very good crime book as well as a cool fantasy book.
And that's what Ron's really bringing to it, with his run, is just a really good, you know, it's a mystery detective book with, you know, a supernatural slant, rather than a supernatural book with a slight detective overtone. It's really cool, just New York detective stuff, which is always fun.
How's Dynamo 5 going now?
Dynamo 5 is awesome. We have a lot of cool stuff coming up. And speaking of awesome, we have a guest appearance by Supreme in issue 26 from the Rob Liefeld's awesome creations. Have a number of guest appearances in 26, but Supreme is the only one I'm going to dish out right now. We have issue 0 is on sale in 2 weeks, and that's our 99-cent, you know, introductory issue that's designed to be a good jump-on point for new fans. Kind of tells you everything you need to know about Dynamo 5 in a short little adventure for less than a buck.
Very cool. I also want to know, how was Gemini received at the end? It was Gemini, wasn't it?
Gemini,
yeah. How was that received at the end of the day?
It is received, and sadly, we have not reached the end of the day yet.
Okay.
It's a 5-issue series, and only 3 have come out so far.
Okay.
We've hit some delays on the creative end of it. We're still working on it. Issue 4 is almost drawn. It'll be out as soon as we can. You know, it's the kind of thing, if it was an ongoing series, we'd get a fill-in or do something to date it back. But since it's only 5 issues, we feel it's important to have the same creators do all 5 and make it remain true to the vision of it. So it's taking longer than anyone would like, but it's still going to reach a conclusion.
We will eventually be collected in a trade.
That's the hope, yes. Yep.
Because then I was going to say also, if you had missed the issue run of Noble Causes, please pick it up in trade.
Yes.
My favorite superhero soap opera, and glad to see the Ferververse. Every now and then we'll pull characters from various books and they will make appearances, as Captain Dynamo did back in Noble Causes, and hoping that the Noble family will make their way into Dynamo 5 at certain points.
They just may, yes. It's fun. I mean, you know, Robert Kirkman's doing his big done-in-one crossover in Invincible, and we're doing something a little similar in Dynamo 5 26, which will have some other characters guest starring, but the approach is different, and it's a more narrow focus, which we'll give away at a later date. And it spins out of issue 25, which will be out later this summer, which is a double-sized anniversary issue, which changes the book in a very fundamental way, and issue 26 will kind of spin out of that. It's going to be pretty cool. It's I can't think of many books that have taken this direction, have been able to make this kind of change that we're doing, and I can think of one, and that's it. So it's going to be pretty cool.
Well, I remember the kind of gutsy story changes you made, and jumps ahead in time in Noble Causes, and you're a risk taker, and it comes through well in the stories. We'll keep our eyeballs open for and in previews and in our comic stores for the Witchblade Annual and continuation of Gemini and more Dynamo 5 from our pal Jay Ferber. And I won't bore you with TV detective talk unless you have something immediately that comes to mind.
Nothing off the top of my head. We can digress another time. But,
The Mentalist, I'll say that's a pretty good new show.
Yeah, The Mentalist is pretty good. It's a good formula and just real engaging, real entertaining. Yeah.
There you go. More for our TV talk the next time we talk on the phone, which will be soon, because I always enjoy talking to Jay Ferber. So good to see you, man.
Awesome. Good to see you, too.
I'm here with artist Andrew Peepoy, and happy to see him. His fine work on Jack of Fables, for example, works for Boom Studios, The Simpsons. But it's great. Andrew has one foot in the traditional comic world and also one foot in the digital world with two very cute characters, Simone and Ajax, who you can find at comicmix.com. So tell us about Simone and Ajax for a second there, Andrew.
Well, Simone and Ajax is a sort of all-ages, fun, adventure-y strip about Simone, a fun-loving, act-first, worry-about-the-consequences-later sort Minnesota girl and her cute little 3-foot-tall cartoony dinosaur pal. Going anytime, any place, you know, you might imagine, whether it's out into outer space to the moon, or whether it's to find out what actually happened to Atlantis. And, you know, it's just fun, zany sort of stuff. And, yeah, you can read about them at comicmix.com, or if you go to my own website, peepoy.com, you can find easy, direct links to the stories right there with all of the stuff, the black and white books I did with them in the 90s, as well as all the brand new color stuff, including their first full-color graphic novel, The Case of the Maltese Duck.
This is my first opportunity to mention that, because I'm talking to Andrew and he has his stuff at Comic Mix, that not only can you find Simone and Ajax there, but also even great adventure stuff like John Sable from Mike Rell and Grim Jack from John Ostrander and Tim Truman. So really, really cool stuff at ComicMix.com, and they're complete stories and they're free.
Yeah, it's absolutely free. No membership, no sign-up, nothing. You just click on them, you read them, and there you go. Fun comics, great for these tough economic times, you know.
Here, here. And also we should mention, of course, Jack of Fables from Vertigo, a wonderful book written by Bill Willingham and Matthew Sturgis, and we get great art from Tony Akins and yourself, and you guys are a great team. You truly are.
Hey, thanks, thanks. Yeah, actually, for a little while here, I've actually not been inking Tony because for a little while, I've been moved over from Jack over to Fable, so I've been inking Mark Buckingham.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So, I mean, I always...
That's tough.
As I tell them, you know, I love inking Bucky, I love inking Tony, they're both great artists, so it's like, you know, it's like, you just tell me what you want me to ink this month, that's what I do, you know, I got, both of them are great. So,
it's a Ginger Marianne, Betty Veronica kind of problem.
Yeah, so it's great, so I was always helping out occasionally on Fables, but I just finished the most recent story arc, it was 5-parter with Bucky. We're taking an issue off, and then we go into the Great Fables crossover, this 9-part story that's going to be coming up here in the spring, which is going to run in Fables, Jack of Fables, and the Special Fables miniseries, The Literals. And so it's going to be, you know, big fun thing. Boy, you won't believe what happens. And it's going to be, 4 issues of, I'm doing 4 issues of Bucky, which is the first issue of Fables, and all 3 issues of Literals, and then Tony is hopping over from Jack to do the other 2 Fables.
Cool.
So I'll still be working with Tony, but now this time on Fables itself. And meanwhile, the other penciler, Russ Brown, and Jose Marzan will be doing Jack. So I'm doing 6 to 9 parts. And then after all that's over, Steve Lealoa is coming back to Fables, and I'll go back to Jack, and all will be as everyone expects it in the world. So, you know.
That's awesome. I made the Betty and Veronica comparison before, and sticking in the Archie universe, Andrew had a wonderful turn on Katie Kane as writer and artist on that, and great stories. I always point out Katie's Hollywood story, because I love the parallels to the real world, and also with the MJI, or is it MJL or MJI? The old
MLJ.
MLJ. See, and I know Andrew's a golden age guy, so he'll know this stuff. Andrew had a chance to give a cameo. There was a making of a film featuring one of the old MLJ heroes. Right. Why don't you talk about
that? Right. Well, he got a few appearances actually. They have the character of the Web. And now, while he really has nothing to do with Spider-Man, you know, I mean, I wanted to throw in sort of a tie into modern movie making. So, like in the very first Katie Keene story, she's up for Best Kiss, which is an actual award they give away at the MTV Movie Awards. So she was up for Best Kiss at a video award show. And so I had the upside down kiss scene with Katie kissing the Web, you know, hanging upside down for one panel. And, you know, we never knew if we were going to get to do anything more with Katie after the first story. But when we did, you know, well, all those good Hollywood movies, you know, Hollywood movies got to have sequels. So eventually we got to do a story about Katie filming the sequel, you know, doing the Web Returns. And, of course, you know, then again, the opening panel of it all was, you know, tribute to Amazing Fantasy 15 cover, you know. And it wasn't an actual superhero story because it was an actor playing the Web,
sure,
you know, as an imaginary character within an imaginary story. So, you know, it wasn't like it was actual, you know, superhero type thing. But, yeah, I had fun. I got to play with it because I always loved those characters.
Absolutely.
The Web, the Hangman, the Shield, Black Hood, all those characters. I was always a big fan of those, you know, and the Web was always one of my, and the Web was probably always my favorite of them. And so, yeah, so I, you know, had to, you know, I was given an excuse to fit him in, and I did it, you know, and it was fun. And so, yeah, so we did, I ended up doing 10 stories with Katie, and they ran it Archie and Friends, and Archie's now collected them all into a trade paperback, along with a brand new 22-pager
that
was never appeared before. telling the so-called origin of Katie, telling how she got to go from a little small-town girl to big Hollywood, you know, superstar, movie star, recording star, everything, you know, and... you know, it's fun stuff. It's fun stuff, and I'm hoping to be doing more.
Well, and it's collected in this trade, Model Behavior.
Yeah, KDK Model Behavior, Volume 1, available comic shops, you know, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, wherever you want to try, you know, directly from ArchieComics.com if you want, you know.
And in your work for Bongo on the Simpson books, what's going on with there?
Well, I just got to do one that was sort of fun. It was their spirit takeoff called The Sprint. And I got to sort of do an Eisner-y sort of, you know, inking job over Bill Morrison on that.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, you know, yeah, well, I mean, while on, like, say, Katie Keene or some other Ajax, I'm writing, penciling, and inking that stuff. On, like, say, you know, Fables and Simpsons, I'm just doing the inking.
Sure.
So, yeah, so on the Simpsons stuff, yeah, I just did that story. I just did an issue of Futurama. I do a fair number of issues of Futurama. And then right now I'm in the middle of one of their big events. They're doing a three-part Radioactive Man story that's going to run all three parts in June. It's not going to be like Radioactive Man 1, 2, and 3. It's going to be in the issue of Simpsons and then continued in the issue of Bart and then in the issue of Simpsons Super Spectacular.
Cool.
So, but in the end, you end up with one giant 75-page Radioactive Man adventure. And Tone Rodriguez, who you may know from other books, yeah, you know, other kind of books, he's penciling it. And, and it's fun, you know. I just like fun comics and all this stuff, you know. Whether I'm writing it or someone else is writing it, that's sort of, I'm very lucky at the moment in that, you know, I'm working on a lot of really fun books, you know.
And comic fans are lucky because they are fun and they're done by creators who truly love the characters. I know you're a big Katie Keene fan, and the great thing about Bongo too is the care, and because it is all in-house, it's the same people that made the television series are making the books. Bill Morrison, the old showrunner for Futurama, is very, you know, is running Bongo Comics, and is very an important guy, not only on page, but behind the scenes running the company, and that's the great consistency of Bongo.
Yeah, no, I mean, and they're just, you know, and it's just, and it's like, yeah, I'm just very lucky that I'm working with a bunch of good people at all these companies. Bongo, you know, Vertigo, you know, everywhere, you know, I'm feeling real lucky at this point. I mean, this year makes my 20th anniversary as a professional.
Hey, congrats, man.
Well, thanks. So it's like, you know, and I feel very fortunate that one, I'm still working, and two, I'm working on good stuff, and I'm having a good time with it all. So, you know.
Excellent, man. And also, reach back in the dollar bins to see if you can find some old code name knockout, and you'll see some of Andrew's findings on that great Vertigo series back in the day.
Oh, glad you liked it. Yeah. So, you know, like I said, I was lucky to work on that. I'm just lucky to be working, you know. So.
Well, good seeing you, man, and congratulations. Check out Katie Keene, Model Behavior, and also look for Andrew's fine work in Fables, Jack of Fables, and a lot of the Simpson and Futurama comics from Mongo. Thanks, Andrew.
Yeah, and if you want to keep up on anything else that I'm doing, you know, peepoy.com, I try to update it every once in a while. Students should have a big overhaul, and, you know, I'll be posting news and stuff there.
Sounds good, man. Good seeing you.
Thank you for taking the time.
Staying in front of the Love and Capes booth, and always happy to see Tom Zoller. I usually end up seeing you at cons, and it's great to see you, Tom. Love and Capes, a wonderful book, and also a wonderful digital comic as well. But you just started telling me about a very special event that's coming up in the world of Love and Capes.
In issue 12, which is going to come out near the end of the year, Abby and Mark are getting married, which I don't think is a spoiler to anyone. And you can buy tickets to the wedding. I'm a professional caricaturist as well. I work at parties and amusement parks. And you can, for $25 for a single or $40 for couples, I will put your caricature into the cover. You'll get a print of it. And then if there's an overflow, I'll do a variant where Mark is not in his uniform but in a tuxedo, and that'll be the back cover.
That's outstanding, man. That's great. That's really smart marketing, and I think that's a wonderful opportunity for fans to have a nice cameo in the book and hopefully, you know, expose more people to Love and Capes. And really, I mean, I'm glad you're able to announce this on Word Balloon, because really, if you haven't checked out Love and Capes, it's a very funny and sweet, humorous love story that has the superhero trappings. And, you know, there's the familiar kind of icon hero-girlfriend relationship, but obviously, Tom, you take it in a lot of other directions as well.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I'm loving doing the cover this way because I can really thank the fans who have supported the book for so long.
That's really cool, man. I, of course, am always a big fan of Raider as well. And I always have to ask you what's going on. Raider, if you don't know, and if you haven't heard of previous Word Balloons, is Tom's action adventure corporate espionage story, I guess would be the best way to describe it. There are three volumes of it that I'm aware of.
Yes.
Tell us what the future might be for Raider.
I would love to find someone to publish it so I could do it again. Love and Capes is doing well enough that's keeping me from doing a lot of other projects, and you have to ride the ones that are doing well when they're doing well.
That's cool, man. Well, yeah, exactly. That's
That's great. The strip, is it still available online?
Yes, you can. In fact, now you can read through the entire archives, so you can read essentially the first four issues online, and there's a new strip posted every Monday and Friday.
Excellent. Love and Capes, folks. It's a wonderful book, handcrafted by Tom Zoller, and he's got something else.
And issue 10 will be available for free Comic Book Day.
That's great, too. Stores, you should pick it up if you're not picking up Love and Capes. It really is. It's a nice, warm, friendly, funny, romantic comedy. And, hey, if you're a reader and want to be on the covers, here's your chance. It's Tom Zoller and Love and Capes. Good to see you, Tom.
Nice seeing you.
All right, I'm up in the Newsarama skybox where a lot of the video has been going on that I'm sure you saw at Newsarama.com. I say past tense because I'm not sure when I'm releasing this, but I am happy to be joined by the guys from the Comic Book Club, who I enjoyed working with last year and I'm very happy to be working with this year. It's Pete, it's Alex, and it's Justin. It's good seeing you guys. How you doing?
Thank you.
Great.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for
having us. This is an honor.
Let's wrap up. Thanks a lot, guys. That was great. No. No, seriously, Pete and I have been walking the floors like hookers at the con. Like pink nurses in spandex, for those of you who attended the con.
Yeah.
Among the hookers that have been out there.
You know, honest, John, you look better in a costume than Pete does.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I've been working out. I saw the YouTube video of your guys' show in November, and really, that's a good example of the kind of fun you will get at their live show, which happens, is it weekly on Tuesdays?
Yeah, every Tuesday night at 8 at the People's Improv Theater in Midtown Manhattan on 29th Street.
Yeah, and the idea is, it's the three of us. We usually have some comedy guests, some comic book guests, get together for an hour and just talk about the books that came out the past week.
Very cool.
And yeah, I'm glad you mentioned comedy guests because I was really impressed with like guys like Seth Meyer and Bill Hader that have been on the show.
Yeah.
Plus, you get your funny, you know, comic book guys like Jeff Loeb and Brian Bendis and Matt Fraction, so that's kind of cool.
Joe Q did a special appearance. It was pretty exciting.
Yeah, Jeff Loeb is known as a bit of a funny man.
Jeff is a guy who likes to, like, you know, throw, like, some dog shit on the ice or something just to kind of screw things up. But it's like, here you go, kids.
That's a great way of saying it. Oh, dog shit on the ice, Loeb.
That's what we call him, you know.
Let's take it easy.
Yeah, exactly. No. Jeff Loeb will take it. He'll probably email going, hey, what the hell?
Yeah,
we love talking to Jeff Loeb, actually. I mean,
collectively, all four of us.
Honestly, mean to his book sometimes, but I think it's only because we've loved stuff that he's done before.
Yeah.
And because when we've talked to him in person, he's such a great, funny, personable guy.
You can do no wrong. It's why I have him on the Loeb tapes, and they go on for hours like my Bendis sessions and stuff, but that's always fun. You guys have been getting good guests, obviously, and I think that's great, and it's represented on the website. But, like, yeah, honestly, who have been some of the favorites so far that you guys have talked to?
At this con?
Yeah.
The guys from the Venture Brothers were really crazy.
Oh, that's
and fun.
They were crazy.
Yeah, they
were in a really good way.
Yeah.
We asked them just basically one question, and they proceeded to riff for like 10 minutes.
That's all that happens.
And we went from where are you pushing the show in the next season to having 23-year-olds dressed as babies being puppeted by the two of them in the pilot of the upcoming show. So I look forward to that.
Very cool. And Pete, who's been your favorites on the floor? I know one of them, obviously, that they keep making fun of you with.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm a big Greg Pak fan.
Really?
Yeah, never heard of that. But I got to say, it's been an absolute honor walking the floor with you.
Oh, likewise, man. Honestly, it's not, we have fun. No, I know.
And James.
And, of course, honestly, James has been doing, seriously, yeoman effort, like, on camera and stuff. Because
James is your pimp. Is that correct?
That's right. Exactly. My front man. I do send him out in the field. It's like, would you ladies like to come to the van?
Yeah.
The word balloon guy's waiting.
But I would say I was real excited because I got to finally meet Jason Aaron.
Cool.
I've been impressed with so much of the stuff that he's done, so it was nice to put the face to the name. So.
John, who are some of your favorites?
Glad to chime in. Honestly, Karen Berger from Vertigo, the editor-in-chief of Vertigo. I've been a fan since she was editing Swamp Thing, and so it's really cool to kind of see her and get
She's
to finally talk to her.
She's been doing it for so long, and it's still just like, the fact that the imprint is so going through all the ups and downs, it's amazing.
Well, and
it's so respected.
Exactly. Yeah. It's they're like, she's the lead dog, and every other publisher out there is trying to do what Vertigo does, and it's the truth. And, I mean, it's the best innovative publishing arm out there. So, no, I was really excited to see her. Really cool. We were waiting to talk to John Ostrander and Jan Dersma from the Star Wars books at Dark Horse. Mm-hmm. And I look around, and I'm like, oh, my God, that's Phil Morris, who plays the Martian Manhunter on Smallville. And I'm like, dude, it's Jackie Childs from Seinfeld. I got to talk to him. And he was great. Although I kept calling him it's Phil, but I kept calling him Greg because that was his dad on Mission Impossible. And he's like, and seriously, it was like,
I don't know if you guys out there.
I'm old.
No, John has an encyclopedic knowledge of anything, even tangentially related to comic books. Watching him do interviews on the floor is amazing.
It's so great to talk to you. There was this one thing you did one time that nobody saw except for me.
Well, you know, that's why I don't have any son.
You guys go out and play. I'll be downstairs in the basement watching TV.
Yeah.
And remembering everything I watched.
Okay, Rain Man, see you later.
Yeah, right.
All
right.
But yeah, it was great. But yeah, he was getting pissed. He's like, dude, it's Phil. I'm like, I know, man. I'm sorry. I love your dad, too. It's like, you know.
I also like the deal on the deal. That's fun.
Yeah, you know, we haven't done it yet as far as the floor. I hope we have the opportunity maybe on video to actually get him doing it.
How long have you been here?
Oh,
yeah,
hey.
Why did you come in?
I didn't like the shit I'm hearing about Final Crisis. By the way, what Pete was alluding to.
I walks right up to him and goes, hey, have they given you a hard time on the floor?
And he's like, no, what are you talking about? No, everything's been great. What would they give me crap about? I'm like, well, I don't know, Final Crisis? No, you're the first one. What are you talking about? Don't jinx me. And I'm like, all right, no, I'm sorry, man. Hey, good. I'm glad people are being nice. That's cool. Why would it be nice? But what was wrong with it? I'm like, I got
to
go.
I've been to Dan DiDio's office, and it's a bubble. It's a bubble that they keep him in, and they only let him out for cons.
It always seems to me that he's like at gunpoint. All right, the money's on the table, and if you come in, hurry up, but just don't shoot me, and please save my wife and kids. And he always looks at me, he's like, oh, great, you're back, so I guess you'll be imitating me. I'm like, I suppose I will. It's like Jackie Mason. He's like young Jackie Mason. That's how I always classify.
That's how they classify him in the comic book industry.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. DC's like a young Jackie Mason.
I have a question for you, John.
Please.
You've been to a lot of cons at this point. Are you tired of it?
No, you know, honestly, and I was telling Pete this, and really this is going to kind of sound like, oh, aren't you special? But it's so nice, like, when you walk and people hear your voice and go, hey, are you the Word Balloon guy? And it's like, yeah. People were going up to Pete and saying it. I'm sure you guys are getting it on the floor. So that is the fun thing about cons.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's... You know, you're running around trying to get interviews, but it's like an affirmation that people are listening, and it's also an affirmation that the creators like you.
Yeah.
Which is really
nice. The guy gives him a 20-minute... He has like three people waiting around him to do other things. He's talking his ear off forever, and then signs the book and says, you're one of the greats.
Yeah, well, Greg's cool. I mean, that's
the thing. His work is amazing.
That's the thing. It's guys that you respect their work, and then for them to turn around and say, oh, I really like what you do, and it's like, oh, dude, I'm just a fan. What are you talking about? So that's very nice. And I, you know, like I said, I always get embarrassed like this talk, but it's cool. So that's cool.
We love all of
this. Justin.
Well, I've rarely talked to other podcasters, and I felt like hell we're working together this weekend. It was a good opportunity to say hi.
Yeah.
And honestly, guys, check out their show. It is Comic Book Club, and it's I know that it's since moved to a new home, so yeah, give them the URL.
YouTube.com/comicbookclub is where you can check out the web show, and we do a little blogging at popcultureshock.com/cbclub.
We also put up the podcast from the live show on that website.
Give people a link. iTunes.com/TBDude. I don't even know. go to iTunes and it's Comic Book Club Live. And of course, you know, check out the stuff we're doing with John and Newsarama.
Yeah.
Because it's great. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Good seeing you.
Thanks so much, John.
Looking forward to working with you guys again. And we got one more day here, but I'm sure we'll be back next year and doing the same.
Thanks, man. Awesome. You got it.
So there you go, my audio coverage of the New York Comic Con. I hope you enjoyed it. I didn't expect to be making this announcement, but I found out how cheap the plane tickets are. Good news, I will be at WonderCon 2009 in just a few days in San Francisco that weekend. So another great excuse to run around and bug people on the convention floor and get some great interviews for you to enjoy. There's a great list of creators that are going to be at WonderCon that weren't at the New York Con, and we'll do our best to bring you the big names on Word Balloon. But that'll do it for this edition. Thanks again for listening. This is John Suntress. Don't forget, more of our video coverage of the New York Comic Con is, of course, at newsarama.com. Tons of interviews, and I'm sure more of them will be popping up. So just click over to the video section. We had great guests in the skybox and great guests on the floor. Make sure you check them out. And by all means, check out some of those books that we discussed today from our great creators. My thanks again to Alex Saviak, Dan Slott, Christos Gage, Joe Gentile, Jim McCann, Jay Ferber, Xander Cannon, Tom Zoller, and Andrew Peepoy. John Suntress reminding you that Word Balloon's archive of well over 190 guests is available at our website, wordballoon.com. Just click on the archive page and do a search on the months. You will be stunned at the people that we've spoken to these past 4 years. We're coming on 4 years this summer for Word Balloon. Any questions or comments about the show, we have our Word Balloon forum, which you can link at wordballoon.com or at our home at jinxworld.com. And again, more coverage coming up from WonderCon, and in between some more interview guests on the phone, because a lot of people that we didn't end up talking to on video or on audio, we made some love connections and promised some conversations in the weeks and months ahead. So that'll do it. Thanks again for listening. Any questions about the show, you can reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2009, all rights reserved.